The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
The Crossman Conversation is hosted by John Crossman. John's heart is to see our community of leaders unite around what we have in common. John will be joined by political leaders, religious leaders, as well as activists making a difference in our nation. Here is your host for the Crossman Conversation, John Crossman.
Welcome to the Crossman Conversation. And I got a quick story. Mike, I want to tell you this story. Honest to goodness, recently I had a guy reach out to me, and he asked me if I could tell him about this property. I do some real estate work and do some investing and a little bit of consulting. And they ask, you know, sometimes people just ask me a quick question. It's no big deal. I'll do that. We're friends. But the ask was kind of big. It was like a long email, right? And so I responded back and I said, look, are you looking to hire a consultant or are you looking for just some advice? And the response back was, oh, just some advice. I'm not looking to hire a consultant. And of course, I was implying I'm not going to do all the different things the guy wanted to do, but I'll just help out a little bit. And that hit me. I replied back again. I said, by the way, if you did want to hire me as a consultant, I'll do it for free in exchange for if you make a donation to one of my scholarships. The one I was thinking was the scholarship we have at University of Florida, Masters of Real Estate program, only one in the country, full ride for graduates, HBCUs. I got no response. Then some of the staff people reached out to me. This is just a couple of days ago. And they called me and they spent about 30 minutes on the phone with me. And in my mind, all for free, which is fine. And I just helped them out. Would you believe 2 hours later, the guy sent $10,000 to the scholarship University of Florida, right?
That's wonderful.
Isn't that cool? That's really, really cool. And so what it's got me reflecting on is that, you know, I've had this concept for a book I've been playing with. And it's my working title has been, you know, hey, white guys, let's talk about race. I'm really trying to think about how can I continue to have conversations with white business leaders, white pastors and things like this. It's like trying to help them become more aware of issues out there. And I always say, like, if you're really not willing to write a check, you know, do something to help out. You know, are you really committed and interested in doing those things? And so this guy was wanting some advice from me and I helped him, but he did write a check and that was good. Well, I'm so excited about our guest today because got Derek Penn here with us. And Derek is a fascinating guy who has had a lot of success, was an athlete, survived 9/11, and he's written a book. And his book is Diary of a Black Man on Wall Street. And so I'm excited because I'm like, this guy has a perspective I think I wanted, which is to help our listeners having these conversations about race. So, Derek, thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Such an honor. Well, to get things kicked off, Derek, would you just mind just tell us a little bit about, you know, your background? Would you mind just sharing a little of that?
Sure. I grew up in Ohio, in the Rust Belt area, Youngstown, Ohio, to be specific, in the northeast corner of Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Steel mills and, car companies were, car production companies, I should say, were the backbone of the community.
Mm-hmm.
Another aspect of the community that brought us together was athletics, primarily mm-hmm. football. I went to Duke University on a football scholarship. I was a fairly well-recruited athlete out of Ohio. At Duke University, I majored in chemistry and English with the intention of becoming a medical doctor, and thankfully that didn't happen, or the mortality rate in the United States would be a whole lot higher at this point, I believe. But from Duke University, I had an opportunity to play a little professional football in the NFL and the CFL. I was there long enough for a cup of coffee in both instances. Did a couple of things in between undergrad and business school. I worked as a lobbyist on Capitol Hill. I worked as a chemist, realizing that I had a big hole in my education. I had a big void in my education. I never took a business course when I was an undergrad. So I essentially went back to business school, back to Duke University, back to the Fuqua School of Business to get an MBA and really learn some business discipline, which I lacked severely.
Mm-hmm.
Out of business school, was lucky enough to get a few offers on Wall Street. And my first entree was to Morgan Stanley. I was in Morgan Stanley's first formal MBA training program. I was a block trader, an equity block trader at Morgan Stanley right out of the training program. And 34 years later, here I am.
Wow.
I worked at five different firms and all on the equity side. and most of those 34 years in a management role.
Gotcha. So I want to go back because you just said about 17 really interesting things, Derek. You can't just lay all that on me, and then that's a lot. It's a lot. So let me go back. First off, what position did you play in football?
I played linebacker pretty much throughout my entire career.
Yeah.
I did play a little quarterback in high school as a freshman. As my coach said, Derek, you're the only guy that can remember the plays, which wasn't the case, but nevertheless, pretty much linebacker my entire career.
All right, so let me ask you this question. Would you rather come across on a weak side blitz, or would you rather come right through the hole and hit the running back right as he's trying to get in the end zone? Which of those two plays would be your more fantasy hit?
It's always better to hit than be hit. there's no doubt about that. So I always prefer to the defensive side of the football.
I gotcha. All right, so let me ask you this last, because I could talk about football day with you because you're a great guy to ask this to. So all the years you played and played college and pro and Canadian, all that stuff, who was the most impressive player you ever watched play, was around?
Most impressive player? Probably Bob Greasy, and I'm dating myself a bit. He was the quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, and a very unassuming person physically, that's for sure. He was very slight. But quite brilliant. If you took a look at him, you just didn't figure he belonged on a football field. But he obviously was an incredible quarterback, a Hall of Famer, a student of the game. I just marveled at looking at Bob Greasy and looking at him physically. Just couldn't understand how he did some of the things he did. Very intellectual football player and athletically gifted, even though if you couldn't see it from the outside.
Well, listen, as a lifelong Dolphins fan, you just made my day. You just made my day. That wasn't rehearsed. You just made my day. That's just so awesome. That's great. Derek, just so you know, I have a little bit of a relationship with Larry Little. You know, he played for the Bethune-Cookman, played for the Dolphins. And I had a dinner with him one time, and I had this kind of exchange of just tell me about your most impressive player, whatever, and I was just like getting that sort of human experience. Now, the other thing I would
tell you,
go ahead,
can
please.
I tell you a Larry Little story?
Please. I have all the time in the world for Larry Little stories. Go ahead.
So I was in the locker room with the Dolphins, and I noticed that some players were allowed to get away with certain things, and some weren't. And Don Shula was the coach. And Larry Little smoked in the locker room.
No way.
And, he smoked in the locker room. And others weren't allowed to smoke in the locker room. Some people drank beer in the locker room. Others weren't allowed. And when I was released by Don Shula, I had the wherewithal, I guess, at that point, to ask him, what his management style was. And Shula said, as a coach, you have to understand what buttons to push and what buttons not to push. If I told Larry Little that he couldn't smoke in the locker room, Larry would shut down. If I told Larry Zonka that he had to be underweight or had to come in at a certain weight because we all had weight requirements coming into camp, Larry would shut down. If I told someone that they couldn't drink beer in the locker room, they would shut down. He said, I had general parameters for everybody, for the entire team, but I had to know which buttons to push. And I quite frankly used that philosophy when I managed people in my management career on Wall Street. You need to know what buttons to push and what gets people going and what shuts people down. And I learned that from Don Shula, and that came from Larry Little.
Derek, that is the coolest story I've ever heard in my entire life. Okay, it's like I don't need to hear anything more. I'm done hearing stories. That's the coolest thing ever. That is totally, totally awesome. So I want to ask you this. Derek, I am, among other life challenges I have, I'm dyslexic, and academics was really hard for me, and I respect it so much. And so when I think about there's no way I could have gotten Duke undergrad, much less an MBA. There's no way I could not have passed a basic level chemistry course. And I don't say that to be self-defacing, to say the actual, that's the read. So when I think about you academically, just tell me about that experience, being on the campus of Duke, taking those classes, the MBA. What was that like?
Well, I'll tell you, quite frankly, and being honest, I was unprepared for Duke University. I did as well as I possibly could in high school. I went to a public high school in Ohio. I never got less than an A on any final report card from kindergarten through my senior year in high school. So I was a straight A student. I was a 4.0 student. When I got to Duke University and being stacked up against those that had gone to private school or even better public schools than I had, I was behind considerably. I had to take a number of introductory courses. I was struggling to get C's, quite frankly, and I had never seen a C in my entire life up to that point. So it was eye-opening for me as well. It took me about 2 years to catch up. It took me to swallow a lot of grades that I had never seen before. I failed a few tests, which was, you know, something I had never done in my life. So that was a rude awakening for me, but I did manage to catch up towards the end. And I vowed in business school that it would be a different scenario. And once again, in business school, because I didn't have any business courses in undergrad, I was once again behind, but it only took me a semester or two to catch up. So I was behind the eight ball as well. It just took a lot of work and a lot of swallowing of pride and a lot of times, a lot of time in the professor's office after hours, but I managed to get through it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, we're going to go ahead and take our first break. This is John Crossman, the Crossman Conversation, with Derek Penn, Miami Dolphin, Duke grad, double grad, super smart, super athletic. He's my hero. I love this guy. We'll take a break and be back in just a minute.
Are you looking for remote work but are worried that you don't have the right skills? The Central Florida Urban League offers a Microsoft Office Specialist course that teaches you how to use Microsoft Word, Microsoft Excel, and Microsoft PowerPoint. With your MOS certification, you will have a major advantage when applying for jobs. For more information and how to enroll, call the Central Florida Urban League at 407-841-7654 or visit our website at cful.org/Microsoft_Office_Specialist.
Once again, here is John Crossman.
Hello, it's John Crossman. We're back at the Crossman Conversation with Derek Penn. Derek, you were just telling me about how you were super bright and you're a straight A student. You never studied, just you walked into your Duke finals and made straight A's. That's what you were just saying, right? That was your point? No.
Absolutely the opposite.
Absolutely. So, but you persevered, and so there was time of transition. And one of the things I wanted to pick up on that is that a lot of my listeners know that I'm a huge fan of historically black colleges, and one of the reasons is I've had the honor of guest lecturing about 30 different universities. I've never guest lectured at Duke. I have lectured at UNC, which I know is like a poor man's Duke. That's just a joke just for you, Derek. But in doing that, the most impressive students I've ever met have been from HBCUs. FAMU is an example, outstanding university, and I'm a trustee at Bethune-Cookman, another great one, where Larry Little went. That's actually how Larry and I met. But, you know, those schools do a great job of helping students who are coming who maybe don't have the, private school, stuff, and helping them assimilate and then build the skills and then getting them out to the world. So, you know, it's amazing. You were able to do that kind of through your chutzpah and hard work. But I'm glad that we, in this era, we have more and more resources for students who they're diamonds in the rough, right? And so there are people out there like that. And then they become big-time players like yourself, both in life and in sports. That's awesome. Derek, I want to pivot here over to the other topic I want to talk about. And, you know, you heard me say this earlier that I'm trying to figure out how to have healthier conversations about race. And if you were sitting next to me and I was interviewing you, and it was a room of 30, 60-year-old white male CEOs, and I was like, Derek, what do these men need to know as they're hiring and recruiting and creating really healthy work environments as it relates to race? What would you want them to know and reflect on?
I guess, first of all, listen. And many times when I say that, I said, are you waiting to speak or are you listening? There's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have a story. People of color, most of us that have had some degree of success, have had, many obstacles to overcome. Many people think that my success was linear. It wasn't. I had a lot of pitfalls along the way, but none of them were fatal. I would ask them to listen to my story, listen to my struggles, listen to what a common day is for a person of color. I could give you an example of what a person of color may go through. I'll collapse it into one day, but this could happen over weeks. But let's, for argument's sake, say it's one day. So I'm on the job. I'm the head of equity sales and trading for a major firm. And I walk in the office. Let's back up even before I get into the office. I live in Manhattan, and it is common for taxi cabs to pass up people of color on the street. So that's the first obstacle I have to overcome that day. Four or five cabs pass me, and they pick up a white person down the street. So I'm a little agitated, but I'm used to that. I get to the office where I'm the head of equity sales and trading, and these are all things that have actually happened, but like I said, I'm collapsing them into one day for illustrative purposes.
Gotcha.
I get to the office and say I have a new boss, and that boss questions my intellect despite my position, despite my experience, et cetera. A little perturbed, okay, but I have to prove myself to her. Going forward, later that evening, being the head of equity sales and trading, I'm in a pricing meeting for an IPO. And in that pricing meeting, I'm in that meeting because I want to understand the allocations. I want to understand supply and demand. I want to understand who didn't get their allocation. And the company is in the room, and the CFO is in the room. And this is a CFO that I've spoken to for the last 3 or 4 weeks after the close every day, giving him some market color. And when we introduce everybody in the room, the CFO has an expression on his face like, geez, I didn't realize you were black. And every black person or every person of color has seen that face on a white person before when they just were introduced. So I will tell you the IPO went fine the next day. But leaving the IPO, and I go shopping at Saks Fifth Avenue. And as soon as I enter Saks Fifth Avenue, someone is following me. And every person of color will tell you they've been in a department store or a fairly large store and been followed. I'm followed up to the sixth floor of Saks Fifth Avenue on Fifth Avenue here in Manhattan. And a salesperson there shows me maybe some inferior clothing rather than, you know, I'm dressed very well. I'm carrying a briefcase. My shoes are shine. I have a nice Hickey Freeman or Zegna suit on. But they show me some inferior product. Every person of color has been there. I go meet a friend to have dinner at an upscale restaurant. We're seated in the back near the bathroom, near the kitchen. There are empty tables out front. But we rationalize that maybe those tables, there's some later reservations coming on. We leave the restaurant. We go to see the New York Knicks play. I was a Knicks season ticket holder for 30 years. Say in year 15, you would think that the ushers that show me seats, that show me to my seats, and my seats are 8 rows from the court, rather than let me just go through because they know I'm through, they check my tickets, even though 4 or 5 people of the majority right in front of me, he didn't check tickets. My friend is a little perturbed. Geez, you've been coming here for 15 years. You would think they know you. Well, don't worry about it. We go sit down, and sitting adjacent to us are 2 white females. And as soon as we sit down, my friend is sitting next to one of the white females, and they clutch their purses. Mm. And my friend, I'm hoping he didn't see it, but he did see it. And he says to the woman, he said, ma'am, I don't want your purse. I don't want anything in it, but I'm very offended by that movement. Now it's an awkward movement for all 4 of us for the entire game. Mm. We leave the game. Say I'm going to my home up in the Hudson Valley, not in Manhattan, and I'm driving a 911 Porsche. And I do have a lead foot, and I'm pulled over, rightly so, because I am speeding. And I'm pulled over, and the white policeman approaches the car. Every person of color, certainly every male person of color, knows to keep their hands on the wheel, no quick reactions, no whatever. I had my license and registration in my hand, and the white policeman, rather than talk to me about speeding, asked me, where did I get this car? And there's a person on my shoulder that follows me, and he says, Derek, don't respond. Don't say anything. This can go sideways really quickly. Nothing happens, fortunately, other than getting a ticket. I come home, sit down, exasperated, a rough day, turn on the television, and you see CNN, and you see the inhumane and murder of George Floyd. So those things can send you to the insane asylum, to prison, or the insane asylum within prison if you let them get to you. But that is a compressed 3 or 4 weeks into one day, and that's what a person of color goes through. It is absolutely exhausting.
Derek,
exhausting to the point.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I want to make sure I'm listening, Derek. I don't want to get this wrong. So, Derek, I want to say something, and if you don't mind doing this little exercise with me, I'd like you to just say a feeling you had. Just give me like a one-word answer. Is that okay?
A feeling that I had relative to what?
Yeah, so I'm going to say this. When the cabs go by and don't pick you up, you felt blank.
I guess initially angry, but it's happened so many times. I've been to the Taxi and Limousine Commission in New York City. My record is about 22-0 at this point. It's expected later on, but initially I was angry and offended.
When you when you feel like you're having your intellect questioned, you feel what?
The intellect question from the boss, aggrieved.
Mm-hmm. If you feel like you're being followed, you feel what?
Offended.
I want to stop at that because we're running. Part of the biggest thing is running out of time, but I want to just sort of make that point that here you are, a hardworking guy, a well-educated guy, a lot of great things going on, and as you're living your life, you're experiencing things that any human being in those experiences would feel angry, aggrieved, offended, hurt. And so I think that if we, and I'm a Christian, and I would say to my Christian listeners, especially you guys, like if we're having a heart for people and understanding that God gave us feelings for a reason, and if there are people in our communities, our brothers, our sisters that are feeling these things because of their reality, we need to have compassion for those feelings.
Yes.
And then we need to think through what can we do to be a healing component. And I want to hit this real quick, and we're going to have to wrap up. We need to have you back another time, Derek, because like you're my favorite person on the earth right now. You know, what's there that expression? It's like an unacknowledged wound won't heal. So when we think of how do we heal on an individual level and how do we heal as a community, how do we heal as a nation, part of that is the step one was your whole point. We got to listen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Mike, I'm going to wrap up with this. You know, I was doing some work with a ministry that is working with women that survived sex trafficking. And they tell me that the key thing for those women to have healthy lives is to be able to tell their story. And, you know, Mike, when I hear that, I don't want to hear their story, honestly, because it's so sad. But if I love them, I want to hear it. If I love Derek as a Dolphin Duke guy, I got to love this guy. And as Ohioan, my dad was from Toledo. If I'm going to love my brother, I need to listen and hear his heart, right?
That's right.
And that's a core step to healing. So, Derek, thank you so much for being our guest. Your books, Diary of a Black Man on Wall Street. I want everybody to buy it. Buy that book. Read it. Give it a review on Amazon. And, Derek, I hope you'll stay in touch and let us know what we can do for you in the future. So thank you, Derek.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me, and thank you for the audience. Appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. And as always, please make sure to support your local HBCU.
This has been Crossman Conversation, produced by a Crossman Career Builders Mark Radio Production.